This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Rose Oconee Historical Society. I've been telling you about Dr. Parker, who practiced in Warroad starting in 1900. I'll read you more from a story written by Earl Chapin for inclusion in Hazel Wahlberg's book, Remembrances. There were two things that helped sustain the wilderness physician. One was the tradition of the English wealthy to help the poor. The other were the cash remittances he received every now and then from home. Parker family money built Warroad's first hospital. The prospect of another remittance was always good for loan from the bank when Doc's resources ran low. When a diphtheria epidemic struck in 1900, Parker was the only doctor in Rose Oconee. "I drove both night and day with many changes of horses," he told me. "I had a light sleigh with canvas cover with enough room behind where I could sleep with a horse blanket thrown over me." As my driver continued on, "When I got back to town, there were cases to attend there. Then I'd load my grip with medicines and gargles, take a good drink of whiskey, and off we would start. I'd go for a week with never time to take off my clothes." There were some deplorable conditions. In some homes, children lay dead. At other places, the bodies had been removed to barns or granaries. I remember one case where I found two girls, about 8 and 9 years old, hugged together in extremity, gasping for breath. I had to use force to get solutions into their mouth and throat. They were both far gone and died later. It was sad, but I did what I was able to do. Many children died that year, many whom I could not reach. Antitoxin was unavailable. I would get busy with my tongue depressor and an atomizer using Loeffler solution. We used a disinfectant of tar and creoline. Pretty primitive, but it was all we had. I never got diphtheria. It was either the whiskey or Providence. There was a woman who had been hooked in the abdomen by a cow. It took 2 hours to close the wound, a farm woman administering the anesthetic. When Parker made a return call, he found the wound inflamed and suppurating. The woman's eyes were sunken. Her skin had a transparent look. "I felt there was no hope," said Parker. The husband stood by the door and the tears ran down his face. "God, I felt sorry for this man. Something seemed to tell me to go back and try again. My conscience said that if I was not able to save her, I may at least learn something." Parker opened the stitches, and the peritoneum seemed still healthy. He went through the laborious work of cleansing the wound and restitching. The woman recovered. The incident has the usual Parker twist. The husband came to my office and wanted to know his bill. He was a poor man. I said, "Look here, I don't want a cent for my services except the cost of medicine and materials. You know," he added, "that woman weighed 198 pounds when I operated, and 92 when she recovered. I told her if she didn't quit eating so much, she'd have a relapse. She stayed slim." As Parker talked about his life as a wilderness physician, he evoked images out of the past. An Indian driving him across the frozen lake in a Model T Ford, the side curtains a travesty of protection against a strong wind with temperature at 40 below, a traveling companion breaking through the ice and rolling out with the doctor's grip still in his hand. 4 children down, but we had antitoxin. They were poor and had no money. I paid the driver $15. There were 13 children, and all they had to eat was rutabagas. I wrote to the town clerk and told him that if he didn't get over with a food supply at once, I'd report him to the governor of the state. A girl died after giving birth to an illegitimate daughter. Her last plea was, "Doctor, take care of my baby." Parker arranged for the child's adoption by a well-to-do childless couple. She blessed their home, married, and is now living out in California, the doctor concluded. Parker's experiences would fill a book, but just one more will suffice. In January 1916, on a day when the snow squeaked, the telephone poles popped, and the smoke stood up straight, he received an emergency call to Bixby Island in Lake of the Woods. Bixby lay at the end of 35 miles of heartbreak over the ice and snow of the lake. The trip was attempted in a big car with one man as chauffeur and the owner as consultant. The vehicle was loaded down with auto chains, repairs, planks for crossing cracks in the ice, and for some unknown reason, an anchor. It was an open car. There were no side curtains, and the mercury had burrowed to the bottom of the tube at 45 below. They started at 2 p.m. At sundown, the car foundered in ice reefs. The men worked all night to extricate it, and the party reached Bigsby Island at dawn. The doctor tended the patient, and at 11 a.m. they started back, only to stall once more in the same ice upheaval. This time they worked until dark, then abandoning the car made by compass and lantern for Long Point, 12 miles away. The snow was more than knee-deep with a crust frozen so that every 8 or 10 steps the travelers would break through. Climbing, slipping, and falling under a frost blaze of stars, the men at last gained the shore and the shelter of a settler's cabin. The doctor laid down on the floor and was unable to get up. They placed a pillow under his head, and he slept for 12 hours. I'll read more of Dr. Parker's story soon. Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our county stories.